This is Business of Home. I'm your host, Dennis Scully. Every week, I'll be talking to leaders and innovators from all corners of the home industry. My guests this week are artist and activist Melanie Barnett and designer and artist Layden Lewis. They're two of the 22 creators behind the Black Artists and Designers Guild's new project, Obsidian, a virtual concept house designed to celebrate innovation from Black creatives and to craft a home around the past, present, and future needs of Black families. I spoke with Melanie and Layden about why the Obsidian House is more like an innovation-driven car show than a typical designer show house, the challenges of creating meaningful partnerships with sponsors, and why the design industry needs to get beyond diversity as a goal and start focusing instead on equity. Today's podcast is sponsored by Cherish, the interior design industry's source for one-of-a-kind antique and contemporary furnishings, art, and decor. With over 500,000 items and 1,000 new arrivals daily, most with no lead times, Cherish is a must-visit for designers. Go to cherish.com. That's CHAIRISH.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Universal Furniture. Universal's new special order upholstery offering allows you to unleash your imagination like never before. With over 400 fabrics, 50 leathers, and over 200 frames to choose from, crafting your perfect piece is fun and easy. Now available, drape any frame in any fabric. Customize with 6 different leg finish options, plus 3 nail head trim choices, and enjoy 360-degree views of your creation before purchasing. Learn more at universalfurniture.com. And now, on with the show. We are going to be releasing this show the week that you are going to be unveiling this amazing project that you've been working on. And I want to tell people about Obsidian House and have you explain for us exactly what it is and who wants to kick it off.
Well, I think first let's take a step back, Dennis, and first introduce the Black Artists and Designers Guild, because that's going to help to put it in context, Obsidian. Black Artists and Designers Guild, we are a collective of artists, designers, and makers throughout the African diaspora. And majority of us are based here in the U.S., but we have members overseas in the Caribbean, Africa, and in Europe. You know, our organization is really about working towards creating more visibility and equity for our members. And during COVID, like everybody, had to start, you know, communicating and meeting on Zoom. And during that period, when we first started meeting, which was in like early April, I realized early on that we needed to create our own project. We needed to have a space where we get to explore not only our creativity, but thinking about what does space look like and what could it feel like, knowing that Black bodies will occupy it. And then take a deeper dive as to what are the possibilities. And so we took a different approach from not necessarily starting with, oh, let's find the pretty fabric and the couch and all the accessories and items. It was more about how do we connect to the community so we could build a space that really supports, one, the well-being and our health, and then also think about our lifestyle and cultural lifestyle habits that we have. And so we started to interview and different families and looking at Black families from a perspective of knowing that it's multi-layered, understanding that there's no one formula. It doesn't fit into the nuclear family that we've all been told is what, quote unquote, we possibly should aspire to have. But family comes in many forms. And so we wanted to create space that really supported all of that. And that's how the birth of Obsidian started. And of course, it's grown much larger than we initially planned out. But that's part of the creative process. And once we found out more information, I think, about us, not just culturally, but just thinking about, you know, space is a right for us. And historically, we've been limited on the space that we're able to occupy. And so we decided, you know, instead of just doing like, you know, say a 2-bedroom house, 1-bathroom, and there's nothing wrong with that, we wanted to do something grander and more aspirational so we could put that sense of dreaming back into the community. You know, we could talk about those spaces, but I wanted to give you just the essence of what Obsidian, how it started.
I appreciate that very much. Layden, do you want to add to what Melanie was just outlining?
We want to make it very clear that Obsidian is not a show house. It is a virtual concept house, much in the way as Nina Cook-John, the co-designer on The Dwelling, put so really well, is more along the lines of, let's say, a car show. Mercedes-Benz shows you what they're envisioning for 10 years from now, or Tesla. So we wanted to say, oh, let's use that model to put together ideas that not only grab our story now, but to project that story into what's being referred to as our ancestral future.
I like that.
Yeah. So we wanted to make sure that we had this way of looking forward while taking the elements that we know are true and true about how we behave, occupy space, and how much space is necessary for us to live our highest selves. Mm-hmm.
To pick up on the point that you were just making, Layden, I want to understand better the virtual concept house. When you unveil this to the public, to the world, to the galaxy, what are we going to behold? How will we see this? How will we move around in this virtual concept house? Can you explain a little bit of that?
Obsidian lives on its own website. So people will be able to go to a specific domain for the house, and they will see, high-end 3D renderings. There will be movement within the spaces. And then you also have an opportunity to learn more about the creators behind the space, as well as some of the makers from the guild who they collaborated with. Because one of the things that we made sure that we wanted to do and wanted to push and position the creators as more of creative thinkers and really design custom items for the spaces. So for the first time, you're going to see a lot of product that it doesn't even exist in reality. But this opportunity gave a lot of the creators in the house to create an idea and see how it would actually look in a space.
Well, and I'm so curious about that when you first described that to me, that so many of these brands would be in a way sort of jumping off points, but that the creators in the individual spaces were really making custom product throughout the house and things that people never will have seen before, and hopefully people will want and hopefully that will create demand for these creators, and hopefully these companies will want to perhaps build some new partnerships coming out of this. Yes?
Yeah, I would also I think when we think about custom, I don't know why that word doesn't kind of sit exactly well with me. I would say original design. We're not making versions of something that's already established, right? That, for example, Melanie's legacy, Sankofa legacy wall. I mean, we can give it a name now, right? Yeah. There are no visuals attached here. So that's a real original invention. Of course, it's a part of her legacy as an individual artist and ceramicist specifically. So it's not only aspirational for our community, but it also gave us the foundation as creative thinkers to say, all right, if I didn't have the limitations of my clients, what would I do, right? If I didn't have the limits, that was what really, that's the digital world allowed for a 3D interpretation of our creativity in a way that was just very different than working in the built environment, the actual physical built environment.
And that's a really great point, Layden, and I appreciate you pointing that out. And maybe, Melanie, you can explain to us in a little bit more detail, for example, about the legacy wall and sort of all of the amazing things that it can do, because you do have the freedom to sort of let your creativity run wild.
Yeah, this is very true. And one of the things about the legacy wall, I was thinking about archives and thinking about the lack of information within the Black community and how it's being preserved. And then again, I was also thinking about how do we prepare for death, even though it's not something that we talk about, but culturally, when we look in African culture and practice, life and death, they intertwine with each other. It's a cycle. And there is no separation, because we understand that it's a part of the journey of the physical presence. And then there's the spiritual presence. So how do we connect those and continue to stay connected to our ancestry? And so the legacy wall is really tapping into that. So, for example, technology was one of the principles that we wanted to incorporate into the experience. And so I thought about how can we use technology as a tool good in a way that helps us to connect with the ancestors on how we're living now and for the future. And so this wall is, the surface are hand-carved terracotta tiles, thinking about the material of clay and how clay keeps us grounded. And then also thinking about the technology, which are their screens. And these screens are voice activated. Didn't matter whether you were physically challenged or you were, you know, able-bodied, that you had access to this wall. So you could ask, what did grandma look like when she was 15? Or what did she look like when she was 50? That this wall would have pictures that appear. It would have video. It would be helpful for celebration. So, hey, if I'm celebrating my 50th birthday, there would, the whole wall would transform into this collage of images and videos. But in addition to the pictures and videos, Dennis, I also want to emphasize that it's also a space to keep the family health history, you know, understanding, you know, the different diagnosis or not of how well did our families live and then how we could adjust our lifestyles, knowing certain things may be in the family and how we could change that trajectory. But you have to have the information. And so there would be not just the digital, but there's also the actual paper format, because I think both are important. But this house is basically the space where all of that information is stored.
Take me back to this discussion around families and how conversations that you had with different families, with different people in your community, revealed notions of what else should be included in this virtual concept house. And Layton, I know it grew by thousands of square feet, which we're gonna get to. And it started off with just a few thousand square feet. Now I understand it's a compound and it's quite large. Yeah. But part of that was because there were all these different ideas and these different notions that sort of had to be expressed about how this community thinks about family and about other family members coming to stay and perhaps live for a time and all of that. So help me understand that better, Malena.
Yeah, I think because when we think about family, it's multi-generational. And one of the things that we really took a look at, I mean, we all have different family experiences. And what was the common thread was we realized we all have an anchor family in our family. It's the house that everybody goes to for a celebration, whether it's a celebration of life, the birthday, you know, or just want to get together. My mother's house, her house is the anchor house in my family. Layton has one and Nina has one. We all had one. So we realized that this house was going to be, you know, kind of coined with that sensibility or that name. And so then we also thought about, you know, there have been times in my family's history, and Layden could speak for it too, and many of the members, where we've had family members come stay with us. How could we create space for that, knowing that's part of the family structure? You know, there may be a time when, guess what, the great auntie has to come live with you, or grandma is there and, you know, taking care of her daughter, whatever. It was also important for us to show and discuss different makeups of family. So whether it's the queer couple and with children and the single woman with no children. So, or it's grandma raising her children. So whatever the dynamic, we wanted to embrace all of it because it all matters to us. And we talk about that. The creators talk about the different family makeups within the descriptions of their spaces.
The arc of the meaning has changed over the year, right? Like, literally, when we discovered that Black and brown people were disproportionately affected by COVID, we knew we needed a house. You know, we needed a house that really spoke to generational issues around our health and wellness. You know, and you know, I have a family that is, you know, generationally on my mother's side, metabolic syndrome, which is your diabetes, your high blood pressure, your high triglycerides, or however you want to put it. I don't know the medical terms for everything, but my response to that was in another room, which we can get to. You know, could I exercise on the landscape? Could I feed myself through the landscape? Could I, Nina, which I hope is okay for me to, yeah, please edit this part in. She's given birth to two of her three children in her home. That's incredible. I had not known that. My love of African birthing stools goes beyond aesthetically the beautiful object. Now I understand that, you know, Nina had one, you know, or she had some sort of tub that she arranged within her kitchen to give birth. And that's really amazing, you know. And we don't somehow design the way it currently is depicted, somehow gets rid of all of that, the back of house stuff,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
when you the shelter magazines, let's say the shelter magazine convention is that we show you the bathroom, but somehow we're not using the bathroom, you know, and you know, and all this stuff. So I guess you know what I'm trying to get.
Yeah, and also Dennis, I mean, to Layden's point, like when we think about the family lifestyles, like we notice that one of the common questions we asked was, where do you do your hair? Like, what's the space? So we made sure we created a space just so you could do hair, because that's really important to us. I think also what's important too is that not only is it a place for productivity, we also created a space so you could ignite your creativity. There is an art studio, and you could literally have guests, parents, or other family members on the compound. And the last point I want to bring up with when talking about family and space, Dennis, because I don't want to forget this. Another thing that we thought about when we were designing this space. Now you have to remember too, Dennis, I'm going to take you back to April. And in April, we had experienced a series of murders of Black bodies from Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and then we got into May with George Floyd. And we realized from each one, each three different scenarios, right? But all under the same premise. And then Breonna's murder, being in her own home and still not feeling safe. We took that as this is so important for us to really start to address the ideas and what space could be like and feeling safe in that space. And we designed from that premise as well. So that was really important for us that even in 2021, we still don't even feel that security. And we want this house to really get the community to start thinking about that in a different way as well.
It just came to me as like safety is luxury. I mean, can you imagine that that we would be actually thinking about a group of an individual demographic of people in America thinking about security as luxury? It's pretty astounding.
Yeah, and you and I have spoken in the past about sort of how one creates a feeling of safety in a home, Layden, and I'm wondering some of your thoughts about that. And I do want to hear about your room as well. So maybe tie that in.
Okay, so really broad strokes, we enter the landscape, which is the project Obsidian is imagined on an imagined site that's located in Oakland, California. And we chose that site for a couple of different reasons, which was the nexus of Black tech, its proximity to Silicon Valley, the historical richness of the Black Panther movement, which is history, is really based in a lot of communal housing and wellness of the Black family. So that's one thing. So what we did is what Nina and I did, and as a really group collective, we thought about how you entered the landscape through basically lush vegetation, and you kind of enter what we call as the buffer zone, as the shield wall. And as you arc over and through the house and through the compound, it becomes more transparent as it becomes more private. So modern glass architecture is what's revealed on the most private parts of the house, where there's security, and the most opaque parts of the house, let's call it, are vegetation and shield wall buffer. That's how we interpret it. You know, we could keep on designing this for the next forever, right? Well. But going to that point, the early point that I made, my room, which I independently made, designed a room called the Room of Requirement. And that room allows for an individual or individuals to go in. And there's been an issue around medical services and the Black body. So we wanted the doctor or the practitioner, the healer, acupuncturist to be able to visit you virtually in your own space, because there are a lot of Black and brown people don't go to the doctor because of the history of being going to the doctor and not getting what you and being actually violated. You know, whether it's, you know, 40 men being injected with syphilis in a test back in the 30s and the 40s. You know, it's historical for us, or our DNA being used to produce medicines. You know, it's just ongoing. So I created this room, and I feel the fear myself. I go to the doctor with the fear that something is wrong. I don't think of my doctor as a healer, my allopathic doctor, right? But I do go to my acupuncturist as a healer. So it's just all of these different things. So now then you could take the herbs, something like Kareli and Mauby, sorrel, things that you can grow on the site, and that could be also pulled in to the conversation about healing your body, along with the reality of having to deal with allopathic Western medicine. All of that could happen in that room. Or
you better tell them later.
Or
one of the things that we have a history of this family and what relationships mean, you know, so there are multiple ways of having sexual identity within the Black diaspora. One of the things that I personally was looking at, thinking about is, can one partner satisfy you? And could you go into the room of requirement and have an avatar of what your best partner might be for that moment, that day or hours, and that person could also take care of you with these robotic arms. So, you know, through a virtual, yeah. So this is it's a multi-layered room, and I'm really talking about bringing the back of house right to the front.
Yes. Once again, I don't remember seeing this at any of the other show houses that I've been to, Layden. I feel this is right. Did I miss this sort of robotic servicing room in other houses on the Upper East Side that I've visited? I don't remember.
The rooms are multifunctional, didn't I?
Exactly.
This has even more layers than I had imagined. And once I've seen, I mean, there are so many questions. Once I've seen this house, I'm going to want to come back for the part two and have you both explain so many. I can see so many things I'm going to need to be explained to me.
Dennis, this is a perfect segue. This is a conversation. We couldn't do everything we wanted to say within a virtual experience. Right. Like not Obsidian 1.0. More to come. We have many more iterations of this to explain so much more storytelling about the depth and richness of our backgrounds.
That's right.
We're taking a quick break from the show to hear more about Universal Furniture. Universal's new special order upholstery offering is Benchmade in North Carolina. With over 400 fabrics, 50 leathers, and over 200 frames to choose from, crafting your perfect piece is fun and easy. Now available, drape any frame in any fabric. Customize with 6 different leg finish options, plus 3 nail head trim choices, and enjoy 360-degree views of your creation before purchasing. Learn more at universalfurniture.com. And now, back to the show. Tell me about the mechanics of bringing corporate sponsors along for this journey and how some of those conversations first got started and how you've described for your partners what this was going to be like and what their participation in the house would look like.
Well, you know, Dennis, we started out with a goal, and our goal is, and it still is, we wanted to empower 1 million Black families with this project. And so how do we do that? You know, and we start that conversation off with our partners and potential sponsors of understanding that this is more than just a house. Yes, it's a concept. Yes, it's virtual, but there's a community that we are connecting you with and that we want to have a deeper connection with that is outside of the trade. We want to get to the people where we know that this kind of living would create a tremendous impact. And it's more about creating impact. So for some sponsors or corporations, they couldn't understand because this is all brand new. It's brand new for us, and then it's brand new for them. And for the ones who really understood, like, you know what? I know of one of our sponsors specifically, what got them was us sharing that this is the anchor house because she has that same anchor family. She thought about her own family and says, you know what? That house is my auntie's house. She was able to see herself in that house. So she understood the importance of for other people to see this. So we did some presentations with some of our sponsors who, again, at first, they were like, oh. That's not what they're thinking. Because again, the conditioning is a show house. And, you know, this is the house. This, you know, the traditional, quote unquote, traditional look and feel. Right. But we had to explain, no, that's not what we're doing. We're really thinking about what does dwelling look like for the Black body now and in the future.
So to your point, in a conventional show house, designers tend to partner with some vendor partners and they might run to some showrooms and borrow some things or they buy some things often, right? This is about original thinking and original ideas and not even just custom, but actually just bringing new things into the world as a result of this partnership.
I want to just clarify, it's hold on.
Please.
You have we also human beings, right? So we have a range of creators, which we refer to our designers and architects and makers and artists as creators, just to clarify, so if anyone's confused who's listening. So, but the other part of it is there are people that specified a lot, right? And that's where their heart is. And that's what they do. And then there are people who custom designed everything. So everyone can be able to mirror. There'll be enough mirroring of the industry side of it versus the completely total custom side of it. Sometimes you'll feel like you're in an art installation, and other times you'll feel like you're in a showroom. You know what I mean? The diversity is reflected within the design there too. It is recognizable, and the house does adhere to gravity. And things like that. So like furniture is not placed on the ceiling upside down where you cannot get to it and things like that. But, you know, it's just meant to push, but you do have some of, you know, you have chairs, armchairs, sofas, you have places to sit, eat, walk, stand.
And so- but Dennis, to your point about, you know, the conventional show house where, you know, vendors, they'll give you product. And we got a lot of opportunity for companies to give us product. But we turned that down because, again, this was the narrative that we wanted to create. We weren't trying to follow along with any convention of what had been done. And we had to teach, you know, the vendors, no, this is how we're doing it. We want you to be a part of it, but you have to understand that this is our house. And so we have our own set of standards and rules, and we'd love for you to be a part. But your product is not good. It's not about giving us product. Because that doesn't position us as being creative thinkers if we just keep taking product and just placing. And so, but to Layden's point, there is, of course, some of that, but our objective was really about creating these original designed spaces with objects and, you know, that really come from our mind and through the research that we had collected from the families.
So to that point, Melanie, traditionally, a custom kitchen brand wants to show their latest wares, and that's their motivation for participating in a project like this, or a traditional show house, I should say. So that's their motivation. Mm-hmm. I want to understand better the motivation that these brand partners were expressing to you and what your sense is.
Well, I'll be honest, the motivation is a lot of these corporations are in the beginning conversations of dealing with the racial awakening and the injustice. And also they're trying to tap into the Black community, understanding that the Guild is focused on the Black community and we do have a say. So they want to align with us. We do have the influence there. And so it only makes sense for them if they're truly starting the beginning of their work with understanding the importance of equity and understanding the importance of recognizing Black talent and voices and the culture, it only makes sense to want to partner with Batch because that is what we're about.
And that's just where I want to go, Melanie. You are taking me exactly where I want to go into this equity versus diversity conversation.
Yeah, I think because to your point, Dennis, there has been confusion between what diversity is and what equity is. With our vendors, we've had, and you know, not just for Obsidian, but this is in general, really giving an education on the difference. Equity comes with a compensation that our members, our creators, have been lacking within this industry. And I'm only going to speak about this industry, but we know that this is not just the design trade. This is an overall issue. And so understanding that in order for us to get on equal when it comes to equity and pay, there's a lot of catching up to do. You know, so the companies who want to partner with us, they have to also understand that, yes, the exposure is great, but we want to grow our businesses. We're all independent entrepreneurs. And we want to have the same type of bank accounts as everybody else who are in the business for the same amount of years, because we have not had that type of financial support. We have not had the same kind of compensation. And so that's one of the missions of the Guild is start to grow our members so they can be in the same. We're not looking, I'll be honest, I know about all these campaigns for the 13% and the 15%. Honestly, all of those could go right out the door because that's late. It's way too late for that. This is about equality now, you know, and equal does not mean you give a sliver. It doesn't. If you get a slice of a pie, that's a quarter. I want the same quarter. If you get half the pie, I want the same half. So we are about.
We love pie. We love pie.
That came up a lot. Turns out. Yeah. We're happy to take more pie, more of the pie. Yes.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah. But what's involved, Dennis, to really make it equal is that some of those pies, the whole pies, they need to be given away. You cannot try to create equity if you're going to still hold on to most of the pie. You're just giving out slivers. We're not interested in slivers. We've been there for many years.
So tell me what that means. Tell me how, beyond just having a conversation about this, what are the steps that everybody needs to take? Yeah. Right? How do we start to move towards equity?
Well, I want to mention that, you know, I've been in this, people are shocked. I've been in this industry for 30 years. You know, I started at a very small little firm for, you know, back in 1987, and then decided to go to interior design and then architecture school. So when I really, to be totally transparent, when I look at the arc of my career and the kind of publicity and visibility that I've garnered, and the equivalent counter commissions that one would expect from the robust career I've had, they're not there. I'm just going to be completely direct. They're just not there. And we are parceling that out. For me to say, Melanie might have a little bit more or different information about her perception about this, but for me, that I know that I am equal to, you know, XYZ firm or you know DEF. Designer / decorator. I don't want to name names.
And feel free. Hold nothing back.
You know, and I haven't gotten the project. So, what does equity look like for me personally as an interior designer in this very intimate architect in this very intimate moment? Is that people commit to understanding their implicit, explicit, hidden racial ideas about investing in creatives, and say, you know what? I'm going to get, like some of my amazing clients have over my career, say what he does is more important than what he looks like or who he is or what neighborhood he came from or whose family he's not a part of. Some lineage, some fictitious mirage of lineage. So that justifies why I should be in some pool and network so that I have access to more, you know, so it's heartbreaking. Because all I want to do is design really great things, but then I've got to do this other job too, which is convince you that I'll spend your money well.
But also to add to Layden too, also to Dennis, is no, I should be hiring myself or Layden because guess what? I've gotten wealthy off of the labor of Layden and Melanie's ancestors. I actually owe and I need to share and give back what I actually never even worked for. That's also part of this reckoning. It's not just, oh, don't look at me because I'm Black. No, you actually do need to look at me because I am, because we've never gotten reparations. And this is part of, for me personally, and I know as a community, part of developing a reparations plan. So we can't wait for the government because that's not happening right now. What are the other ways? But people are going to have those real hard conversations. And Dennis, I had to tell one of the vendors, big time vendor, big company, you have yet to do anything for the Black community. You've been in business for more than 60 years and you're just recognizing us and we're asking for more money and you're questioning it. You have millions of dollars, billions close to. And the fact that I still have to go and fight for more money, that's the part that really, you know, again, this is the work. We're still doing more work on top of more work when it shouldn't even be a conversation. You should just say, look, for the past 60 years, we've made X amount of millions of dollars. And look how much money I've made in my salary and all the individuals at your company. How many Black faces are on your leadership team? Zero. How many are on the second level leadership team? Zero. How many employees are at the low level of pay? Hundreds and thousands. How are we going to change that? And that's going to mean some people are going to have to leave their seats. Because guess what? For the past 20 plus years, you've had a nice cushy seat. It's time to make space for other people so they could also have a cushy seat. And that's the only way the playing field is gonna level. It's not gonna level if the same people are being compensated over and over and the Black and brown bodies like Layden and myself continue to get slivers.
We're taking a quick break from the show to hear about Cherish. Are you a designer struggling with long lead times from your suppliers and increasingly impatient clients? If so, now's the time to shop Cherish. Cherish's vintage antique inventory is ready to ship immediately. To learn more, visit cherish.com. That's C-H-A-I-R-I-S-H RISH.com. And now, back to the show. Picking up, Layden, and connecting to what Melanie was just saying earlier, you were describing your career in your mind should be much farther along as far as the remuneration that you should have been receiving, the partnerships that you should have been offered, the opportunities that didn't come to you, even though your work is in many cases far superior objectively to other firms that got opportunities.
Right.
Now, in this time when many organizations are trying to recognize what hasn't been given, you've been put on a very elite list now, right? You're being recognized as AD 100, and you're being held up. How does that feel coming now, and how do you process it? And
the other night, just to give you a story, the other night we were on our group meeting, and I won't mention the designer's name, but she began to cry. And it really touched me because I'm always on the verge of tears. I'm actually on the verge of kind of crying right now. It's just been where I'm at. I think the first thing that I do is grieve because this is something that it's a grief process of knowing that and looking at other people's careers and the things that the amount of freedom that their financial security has earned them. How do I deal with it now? I hang out with people like Melanie. And I hang out with people like Keisha Franklin and Keita Turner and Everett Brown and Sheila Bridges. And I could rattle off a whole bunch of other names that come together and talk about our experiences and share. One of the things that system did for me over the last 30 years is keep me by myself. So what has happened over the last 2 years, more than any other time in my entire career, is that I am not alone. The system creates, like we talked about in our earlier conversation, this capitalist idea is one for all, kind of. Like if you're not doing it as that single monolith, then you're a failure. What I've learned is that I am a success the more I mentor, am mentored, give my time, and relate to my community. That's how I become richer. So I've been compensated in the spiritual place. And now and then that helps to embolden me to kind of, and it makes me feel a lot more confident to say, no, I'm not going to take that bathroom renovation, honey. That's way behind now, you know, like either I'm going to do this or I'm not doing it at all. So that's what I'm learning. Because part of the issue also, again, was I was comparing myself to those top level designers, and I always failed when in that comparing, as we all do, to those people that had other kind of resources and networks that were just never available to me, despite having been adjacent, very, 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 very wealthy clients. I can't exactly explain how, and I don't know. I don't want to get into a too much of a psychological take on why people are racist, but they, you know, I am my career and the dollar amounts in my accounts. Our reflection of racism not has nothing to do with talent.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm trying to figure out, how we make that change. And so many of the people, Layden, that you mentioned earlier that you hang out with now, to and I envy you that group. It's a great group of people. But so many of the people that you described had the same lack of opportunity. And Sheila Bridges certainly springs to mind as somebody that I've had that conversation with, that here she was at the top of her profession and had all these projects, had her own television show, was the definition of success outwardly. And yet, where were all the partnerships? Where were all of the licensing deals that weren't being offered to her, right? And it was so obvious and blatant and apparent.
It's just bias. It's just biased. That's it.
That's how racism works, Dennis. You know, it only allows one of us through. And because, again, that's what's palatable to the ones who have the money. So... And that's why you've seen so few of us at this top level. And that's part of the work of the guild, is saying that, no, we could all walk through that door together. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
So let's get into that, Melanie, because one of the things that you mentioned the other day was we were all together at the last live and in-person gathering, right? At the D&D yes. building, a wonderful series of panels and talks, and it was a packed yes. house. And right. And every panelist was a person of color. And it just felt like, why doesn't it look like this all of the time? And why aren't all of these people being heard from? And there were so many great conversations. I'm forgetting the designer who, when asked, what do you want people to most know about you? She said, I do accept wire transfer, and it's my preferred method of payment. Was that Joy Mollier? Yeah. It was so great. But it again, it spoke to this. We want these opportunities. We want the scale of projects. Tie that back for me, Melanie, with the work that the Guild is doing and how you're trying to forward this conversation.
And you know, Dennis, that event at the D&D building, you know, was our Black History Month event on celebrating art and design. And I have to tell you, you know, we asked every showroom to participate. Guess how many yeses that we received from that initial email?
How many stepped
Zero.
Up?
And we had to go back and literally go and ask certain showrooms that we already had, they were already friends of the Guild, you know, that they said, sure, no problem, we'll host. And so once the event happened, as you know, every event, every talk was packed to the room.
It was standing room only.
And you know the feedback that was received? The other showrooms were like, what happened? What was going on? Why you didn't invite me? Why weren't we invited? And see, this is what we have to deal with, Dennis. You know, when we do make the effort, and then it's because there's always this level of doubt. There's this doubt that we're not worthy. We're not worthy enough to be supported. No, we cannot hire Layden and pay him $5 million for a project because there's the doubt. We could only pay him X amount. He's worth a $100,000 project when we know he's worth million-dollar projects. But again, it's the gatekeepers who are making the decisions behind these projects. Those are the real people that you need to speak to about how we make the change. So what we decided to do as the Guild was, we can't center ourselves on people who are not interested in supporting our mission. And so we center our practice on ourselves, on building ourselves as individuals, building ourselves as business people, and creating a space so we can cry when we need to, so we can create a strategy on how we want to navigate, how we want to grow our business, create a strategy on how we want to do licensing. When we do speak with our partners, create a strategy so they do not just accept one of us. It has to be a collective of a group of us. And we create a strategy for a long-term partnership. We tell our partners, we're not interested in the one-time donation. That's great, but that is not going to make change or impact the community. We want people to be with us on this journey, and it's indefinite. And that's the thing we always have to stress. When is it going to end? That's a big question. I'm sure you've heard that, Bennett.
Well, exactly. And that's exactly what I wanted to discuss. Have we done enough? Are we good? We made the donation, or right? We put Layden on the AD100 list, and how much do you people need, for heaven's sakes?
No. I think Milady puts it well when she says, you know, that's not the work. That is not the work of checking the box of your ex donation to a Black organization in 2020. That's not the work. You know, that's a write-off. That's not the deeper work that is available to any individual who seeks a higher consciousness. And you will have some people who want to do the work, and you will have some other people who don't. Clearly, we've seen that over the last week and a half. So, as Black people, we were oppressed, and then now we have to do the work to become. I don't think so. It's just too much work.
well, Melanie, I remember so vividly in the summertime when you would come on Instagram Live and just expressed your sheer exhaustion with everyone coming to you for the guidance of how to do this work and the communities that were reaching out to you and saying, oh, what do we do? Where do we start? How do we have this conversation? And you were just saying, no, people, you've got to go out there and do this work yourselves. You've got to educate yourself. yourselves about the historical injustices, understand better when we talk about the privilege that all of you have been living with, what that means. And to your earlier point about the whether it's the fortunes that were made on the backs of or whether it was, and Layden, you talked about this recent incident at the Capitol, whether it was just this feeling of entitlement by this crazy ass group of white people who just felt that they could just do whatever they wanted and no one was going to be stopping them. No one was, right?
We talked about that. I mean, that is a beautiful, that should be in the cover of any Design Shelter magazine, the guy with his legs propped up on Nancy Pelosi's desk and just reclining. That is real power. That's real power in this country, to be able to do that without any repercussions to some degree. Because we know that a black and brown body could not have gotten away with that without a bullet in their head. Let's just be very, very direct. Unfortunately, as graphic as that is and how painful that is. So what we can do, we take care of ourselves and ourselves as a group. Those same principles that apply to Obsidian, wellness, the spiritual, like all of these parts of our system, right? The system of the spirit, the system of the body, the system of the education, the intellect, the brain, you know, and start creating a holistic way of taking care of yourself. And if I'm together and I'm vulnerable and I'm able to come on Dennis's show and be present, then I'm already ahead and I can impact that. That impact is already in gear. It's already a thing that is happening, because I think for us to be here is also an indication that A, you're in your own awakening as a host of a major design industry show, and you're inviting us into the conversation, and other people will listen, and either they will take this and they will feel it in their heart. It's not in your brain you need to feel this. It takes effort, and I've done it too. It takes effort to see that person that's homeless or on the street and not pay attention to them, as an example. It actually takes me effort to go, oh no, I'm creating that wall, that psychic wall between myself and somebody who's in need, right? That's what's been happening, is these psychic walls have been put up so that we don't see that, we don't see empathy, we don't experience empathy and compassion for other people.
Well, and Melanie, to the point that Layden was making so eloquently there, how can we leave everyone who's going to listen to this show with a clear message that, to your point about doing the work, and to your point about it's not just about diversity and it's not just about putting us all on these lists, and that's all very nice, but how do we get to equity? How do we get, as you were saying earlier, Melanie, how do we get some of those people that are currently in seats of power at the table to leave those seats and let this new group in? How do we deliver that message effectively to listeners so they can understand that?
Well, I think every institution, organization, company needs to do their own audit. You know, first it comes with this internally, right? You know what your companies look like. You know who you're doing business with. I mean, not even just from, we're talking about the design industry, right? Who are you hiring to do your bookkeeping? Who are you hiring to do, you know, from the contractors? Who are you, what vendors are you working with to decorate these spaces? Like, look at all of the people that you are interactive on a daily basis and just take an inventory. Like, that's simple.
Right.
So, and then look at your staff. Okay. And then think about that. Now, I believe in giving back. There's always ways to give back to the community. So how do you tie that into the purpose of the business that you're doing? And this is not about, oh, you know, it's easy for people to give money to say children who are starving or home. People are so quick to do that because it makes them feel good. But when they see an organization like the Bad Guild, you know, Black Artists and Designers Guild, where we are business owners, you know, we do have a roof over our head, you know, we're not outwardly suffering. It's a harder sell, quote unquote, even though we shouldn't have to sell anything. It's the idea of, if you really want to be on the right side of equity, you need to create a plan within your own business of how you're going to make a difference. I've seen different models out there from one of our partners. They created an equity fund where they add a percentage to every invoice that they get. And that money goes into a pot, and we're one of the recipients. So there are different ways. I think it's the consistency. Like, you have to make a commitment to doing this. Even if your commitment, I'm sorry, even if it's $10 a month, if you can't commit to 10 grand a month, that's okay. But make a commitment and just follow through. And the money is one part, but opening up that Rolodex and making those introductions is another part. And I think they go hand in hand. You know, when those opportunities do come in, why not think of somebody else that's outside of your circle? You know, why not start to build a new circle of people that you could connect with and help grow their businesses as well? Okay. Because that's one of the big problems too, Dennis, is that if you keep going to lunch with the same people, you know, better get all the opportunities. And we know how this industry is. It's about relationship. It's about relationship. But if you don't know anybody, of course, I'm just going to call Dennis because I know Dennis, you know. So how can you expand on your circles and not take all of this personal? That's the other thing, that people are so worried about themselves and saying the wrong thing and how it looks. Get over it. We go to sleep black and we wake up black every day. And we have to deal with this every day. I'm not asking you to take on my struggles. I'm dealing with it on my own terms. All I'm asking you to do is support our mission, support the mission of what we're trying to create, which is equity. I have a therapist. You go get a therapist. I just need you to deal with, stay focused on the mission.
To that point, in wrapping this up, Melanie and Layden, I want to hear your thoughts on this as well. Is the hope that this Obsidian House gets built?
So there's a couple of different iterations. Like, so we have the vision for the as a guild to build other iterations of this all over the world. That's one thing. But specifically with Obsidian, we'll call it 1.0, is that we are talking to museums. We are speaking to places where fragments of it could live in different ways as an educational tool, and also whether or not the house could or would be built as it is currently designed, that would require a major financial investment on a group of individuals or an individual. And it is absolutely buildable. But, you know, of course, and it would be refined. But, the idea is to be able to build this or parts of the idea of Obsidian to be implemented in different ways.
Yes, and Dennis, yes, we are looking for a partner, a developer, to build this house. And it would be an amazing project that the goal is to build it. And we have, as Layden said, this is Obsidian 1.0, but we have other iterations. And the idea is to go to different cities. And we already have some of the cities laid out where, again, understanding the mission to impact and empower 1 million Black families, we want a partner to help build these houses. So I'm putting it out there. So whoever's listening, call Badge.
Absolutely. Reach out to the Black Artists and Designers Guild and become the financial partner to make this possible.
That is how you could create equity.
That's it. In a nutshell.
That is a perfect way to wrap this up is finding that partner, and I hope that we will coming out of this conversation. Layden and Melanie, it's been such a pleasure to spend time with you, and I thank you for making the time to talk with us and to tell us about the project and everything that you're working on.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis, for having us.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest industry news, visit us online at businessofhome.com. where you can sign up for our newsletter, browse job postings, or join our BOH Insider membership community for access to exclusive online educational workshops, a free print subscription, a private Facebook group, and more. If you have a note for the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@businessofhome.com. This show was produced by Fred Nikolaus and edited by Albert Burge for Podfly. I'm Dennis Scully. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe, healthy, and I'll see you next week.